Trevor has carved out a niche writing fiction that takes on hot-button issues like school violence. We need to talk about Kevin and our broken healthcare system. So much for that. Her latest published novel, The New Republic, is no exception. It's a satire that skewers the way the press covers terrorism. It's published by Harper, and I'm pleased it has brought Lana Trevor back to our show. Hello.
Hi.
A satire about terrorism might seem like a strange thing to write post 9/11, but as you explain in an author's note, you wrote this book in 1998, 14 years ago, and 3 years before 2001. So why wasn't it published then?
Well, for one thing, my sales record was poisonous, so I'm sure that was a big element. But furthermore...
So everything changed when you wrote, "We Need to Talk About Kevin"?
Yes, my sales record improved. And so did the political climate. I think one of the reasons that the novel didn't pique anybody's interest when it was first written is that we tend to forget, but terrorism was simply not a big issue in the United States.
You were living in Belfast when you wrote it, so it was something that you were obviously aware of.
I had been exercised for many years about how effective terrorism was in getting people what they want. I saw it very close up with the IRA getting all kinds of concessions out of the British government because they were bombing the bejesus out of the mainland. And it was extremely frustrating. But I was, and I wrote a lot of op-eds to this effect. You know, this is important. I wrote a lot for the Wall Street Journal. But nobody was interested in the U.S. at that time. And one of the reasons that I wrote this novel as I did, that is with a comic slant, is that it was clear to me that being super serious and moralistic and indignant and huffy was not an effective way of getting the message across.
But that must have affected the way publishers looked at this book after the attacks of 9/11. Now, something funny seemed always in bad taste, even though it would have been funnier before.
Yes, that's why I put the manuscript on ice. I was concerned that, I mean, you remember what it was like immediately after. No one could crack a smile about anything.
People were talking about the end of irony, and a number of writers talked about the fact that you couldn't really write about 9/11 for 10 years.
Yes, and that moratorium didn't last. And the moratorium on humor doesn't seem to have lasted either, and I think that's fortunate.
So in the meantime, you published We Need to Talk About Kevin, which won the Orange Prize in 2005 and was just made into a successful film, The Post-Birthday World, and So Much for That, which was nominated for a National Book Award, all bestsellers. Are you at the point now where publishers have enough confidence to accept what you give to them?
I am at the point where they're stuck with what I give to them.
You've written novels about school violence, the American healthcare system, now terrorism. Did you begin writing with, or do you begin writing with an issue that you want to write about, or is it more that you have a story you want to tell and it just happens to involve an issue?
I often have a range of issues in the back of my mind that I keep track of and that interest me. I'm always looking for something that gets an emotional reaction from me. You know, it either makes me angry or sad or something. But that's not a novel. That's a nonfiction book at best.
But so, the satire can also arise out of that.
Yes, of course. But you still need a story. So it was only when I came up with a premise that I'm not going to reveal because it ruins the reading of the book. You only get it halfway through. But when I came up with that premise, with this little twist.
I'm not sure I know what that premise is, but okay.
That's all right. That's all right. Let's just say it's not the book that you think you're reading at the beginning.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. I do understand. When you decided to publish this book, did you feel a need to rewrite anything, change it a little bit to reflect our post 9/11 sensibilities?
I decided not to. I mean, I did tighten it up. It's really nice to be able to use a cold eye on the text. I wish I could put all of my books on ice for 15 years. But I left the sense of it intact. One of the reasons that I'm very upfront about having finished this in 1998 isn't just because I'm so compulsively honest. It's also because I want credit. I was ahead of the curve. Now, if I want credit for being ahead of the curve, I can't cheat and add lots of little insightful paragraphs in light of our current political climate.
But because it's said in the 1990s, people aren't emailing, texting, tweeting, talking on their cell phones constantly. There is one New York Times correspondent in the book who has a cell phone. So when you went back, was it a shock when you read through it to see how much daily life has changed in just 14 years?
Yes, it was. I discovered that while I wrote it to be more or less in a parallel present, and then I discovered that I wanted to set it firmly in a parallel past. And I thought that might be difficult, but it turned out to be easy peasy because all the technology has changed. So all I needed was this big, clunky, obscenely expensive mobile phone to set the era exactly. Email had just begun, so that it's still unusual. We know exactly where we are. But I'll tell you that the other thing that took me aback about the time and how much had changed is our relationship to journalism. And I found this a little upsetting because my protagonist is wanting adventure and he wants regard, he wants to be important, and therefore he wants to be a journalist. But these days, how many young people are aspiring to be journalists? I mean, that's like aspiring to be somebody who's about to be fired. It's not
that they don't want to be journalists. It's just that they don't see as many job opportunities
exactly.
as they would have in the past.
It's a contracting sector, and it's an area of life where people are fearful of their jobs and that the future is uncertain. And I found that very discouraging, because while this is a book that's hard on journalists, I agree. Ultimately, I'm a big admirer of journalists, especially standard reporters who go out and reap information. And that's information that I'm very dependent on as a writer and as a citizen.
Well, have we become more cynical about journalists also in the light of the lead-up to the war in Iraq?
Well,
people now are questioning again whether journalists are kind of pushing us in the direction of a war with Iran.
Yes, journalists have got a reputation for being a bit too cooperative. Rather than speaking truth to power, you tell power what they want to hear. And then, of course, the News International business in Britain with Rupert Murdoch has made journalists look sleazy again.
It's brought a whole new meaning to the word hack in journalism. The New Republic centers on Edgar Kellogg, a corporate lawyer turned reporter who is sent to cover a terrorist group in a fictional province of Portugal called Barpa. Now, you must have had a lot of fun with all the names that you did here.
I had a wonderful time making this place up. What I did is I took a map of Portugal, which is, of course, on the outer edges of continental Europe already. And then I drew a peninsula onto it. It's funny that Portugal in profile looks a little bit like a face. So I drew a beard into the Mediterranean. And I gave this place its own characteristics, its own culture, or in this case, lack of culture, and its own weather. And because I'm a cyclist and I really, really, really hate wind. This is the windiest place on earth.
Barba means beard in Portuguese.
Yes.
Did you give it that name because terrorists often wear beards? Or was that just coincidental?
No, that's the kind of thing that readers bring like you, and you're welcome to to find that in it.
Lionel Shriver's latest novel, or actually her latest old new novel, is called The New Republic. And it is published by Harper. As you describe it, this, as you said, is an unattractive place. There's the wind, which, o vento insano, mm-hmm. you say. And the only thing that grows there is a fruit called the hairy pear, pera peluda.
Which is disgusting.
And the capital is Cinzeiro, which translates to ashtray. Is that name descriptive of the city?
Well, I made this place have based its economy on making those creepy plastic souvenirs that you see everywhere, like at Buckingham Palace or in Bethlehem. And so they made a lot of ashtrays, and that's where the name of the city came from.
Now, Edgar has been sent to Barba because the paper's flamboyant Barba correspondent, Barrington Sadler, has disappeared. And Am I reading something into this as well? Is that a play on the name Barry Sather or the Ballad of the Green Beret fame?
As a matter of fact, that was called to my attention after I wrote the book, and that is a coincidence.
But
bizarrely,
it's very close.
Yes.
The Barbin terrorists go by the acronym SOB. The name translates to Daring Soldiers of Barba. And their political arm is O Crema de Barber, which translates as shaving cream?
Yes, with which they plan to shear the beard of Barba from the mainland of Portugal.
Now, were you thinking about Sinn Féin and the IRA
when
you were writing?
Of course, inevitably.
And so what does SOB want from Portugal?
Well, it's the same tiresome cause all over the world, as one of my characters observes, national self-determination. So they want independence from Portugal. And the reasoning is that they are being inundated by Muslim immigrants coming from Morocco and Algeria, and they want control of their borders.
Well, Spain also, its neighbor, in reality, has its own secessionist movements to deal with.
Of course.
There's been a lot of violence in that that struggle as well.
Well, this is another issue that the book was bizarrely ahead of its time in relation to, because the issue of especially Muslim immigration into Europe has become enormous since I wrote it.
When Edgar gets to Barba, he learns that Sadler was a man with many friends, lovers, general hangers-on. In fact, no one in the Foreign Press Corps can stop talking about him. Is this book also about the nature of charisma?
Absolutely. And most of my books are about more than one thing at once, usually a more public issue, in this case terrorism, and then a more private one. And you nailed it. It's the mystery of charisma. What is it about certain people that makes them so magnetic? And you know exactly the kind of guy that I'm talking about. Then, you know, if he doesn't come to your party, then your party's going to be a flop. And my protagonist, Edgar Kellogg, has been prone to entrancements with such people from an early age.
Now, what about the title of this book? I'm sure you're aware of the fact that it's also the name of a famous magazine.
Of course.
So why did you choose it for the title of the novel?
That's something that you don't quite understand until the very, very last page of the book.
Mm-hmm. But it has nothing to do with the magazine, although the magazine is mentioned.
It is certainly mentioned, just to make sure that they know that I didn't think I made this up. It's an allusion. It's a nod to them. I hope they take it as a compliment.
Now, making up names, of course, is something that goes back pretty long in your own personal history. Isn't your first name also something you chose for yourself?
Yes. I mean, I've been naming characters for most of my career, so I think there's something appropriate about the fact that I got to name myself, too.
And you also like the idea of looking at things from both male and female perspectives?
Very much. This novel is written entirely from the male perspective. And I think that both authors and readers use fiction to break away from the constraints of gender roles. It's enormously refreshing for me to be able to write from the male perspective and to read from the male perspective as well as from the female.
You're very proud of being prescient here. Well, your last novel, So Much for That, also is very current right now because it's about the healthcare system. Have you been following, I'm sure you have,
avidly,
the Supreme Court hearings? Do you think this is a problem that Americans will ever be able to resolve peacefully?
I don't know. It's been interesting to me how what a virulent issue it is now, how it divides people, in spite of the fact that it is a bill that's trying to make life better for Americans.
Now, I suspect you had nothing to do with the writing of We Need to Talk About Kevin, which starred Tilda Swinton. But were you happy with the film?
I was. I think it's very well done.
Because writers often want to wash their hands of the film version. They just say, well, I sold the book, they did what they did with it.
I think I lucked out. It's not to my credit, really, because I didn't have anything to do with the film. But Tilda's fantastic.
Lionel Shriver will be reading from her book tonight, The 92nd Street Y. That's at 9 o'clock. And then she will be reading and signing books next Monday the 9th at 7 o'clock at the Strand Bookstore, if the picket line is no longer there. The book, The New Republic, is published by Harper. Thank you so much for being with us again.
A pleasure.